if I can work this. Good morning, everyone. This is the Methods One talk. My name is Ben Norwood. I'm from Lancaster University. There are five talks today. We're currently short two people. If they are in the room, if they could make themselves aware, that would be great. But to begin with, we have Carl Peters for talking about Rags to Riches from VU University Medical Center in Amsterdam.
Thanks. So, hi. I want to talk about a package where high-dimensional data happily meets network modeling, the Rags to Riches package. And let me start off by with a little background. So what is the problem and why should we be interested? So, a great friend in multivariate analysis is the sample covariance matrix, or its standardized form, sample correlation matrix, right? Usually denoted S in textbooks. I'm sure we're all familiar. It's ubiquitous, right, in many analyses. But many times, we're actually interested in its inverse. And we all know the inverse to be the matrix that when we pre or post multiply with the original matrix, we get the identity matrix, right? So once along the diagonal and zero everywhere else. So why is this inverse, the sample precision matrix, so interesting? For me, because it can be tied to networks, right? And networks are just collections of nodes which may or may not be connected by edges, and these edges may carry some functional meaning. And the framework in which the precision matrix can be tied to an undirected network is generally known as graphical modeling. And we're going to consider a very simple setting for now, the Gaussian setting, right, the normal setting. So, and in this setting, the vertices, or the nodes, they correspond to random variables of the normal distribution, right? And the edges, they correspond to a conditional dependency structure. So, and it works about like this. So let's say we have Y, right, a p-dimensional normal, and we have a covariance matrix, sigma, population covariance, right? And then we're interested in the inverse, this time in slightly more formal notation. And we call that omega, right? Then for any two distinct variables in the node set or the vertex set, the following relations can be shown to hold. That if the corresponding precision element is zero, its standardized form, the partial correlation, is zero, which implies that these two variables are independent given the remaining variables, which implies that they're not connected in the graph. So here we have a very simple example, right? A 4x4 precision matrix. And from the support, we see a zero in the third row, second column, fourth row, second column. It's a symmetric matrix, so also in the second row and third and fourth columns. And indeed, the corresponding graph, there's no edge between Y2 and Y4 and Y2 and Y3. So what does it mean? This means that Y2 and Y4 are independent given Y1 and Y3. Or even stronger, Y4 and Y2 are independent given Y1, because if we condition on Y1, we're blocking the flow of information between these two. Right? So by doing this conditioning, a lot of spurious correlations or spurious associations fall away. That's why these conditional independence graphs, as they're known, are much more indicative of a causal relation of the flow of information than, say, a correlation graph. And when we have a large structure, it's often easier to look at the graph than to look at the precision matrix. And it's nicer to do analyses on the graph than on the precision matrix, right? So at face value, it looks very simple, right? S, which we've seen before, would be an estimate of sigma, we take its inverse, we get an estimate of omega. We determine its support, so we shoot holes in it, and we're in business, right? We have ourselves a network. But there's a problem. There's always a but. And the but for me is the kind of data that I use. So I work in a research hospital, and we often use omics data. So we use high-throughput technology to collectively quantify some pool of molecular features from, say, blood or tissue or whatever. And what we get for each patient, then, is a molecular profile, right, giving proxies for gene expression or, you know, metabolic abundances or whatnot. And the characteristic feature of these data is that they're wide, right? They're not long, they're not tall, they're wide. Because we often have thousands of molecular features, but the number of samples just runs in the tens or in the hundreds, right? So the data may not always be big, but P is always larger than N, more variables than observations. And usually this is called high-dimensional data. Right? And many times we're interested in molecular deregulation or pathway deregulation. And since a molecular pathway is just a network and a network is just a graph, it makes sense maybe to do some graphical modeling, right? But here comes in the problem. Because when P, the number of variables, approaches the sample size, right, this S, the sample covariance, is going to be very unstable. And when P is larger than N, S is going to be singular, meaning its inverse, our estimate of the sample precision does not exist, right? So we're not in business. And we have a simple solution for that, and that solution forms the core of the machinery of the Rex to Ridges package, right? So it's about like this. So here we have the normal knock likelihood, and we're going to amend it with a penalty. And this is a L2 penalty, you know, a proper ridge penalty. And T, you know, denotes a target matrix. So it encodes for prior information. It can be very low prior information. Could be, say, a diagonal matrix or even a null matrix saying we don't know nothing a priori about the topology. But it could also be strong information in the sense that it may encode for a complete topology from prior knowledge. And then lambda is the penalty perimeter, so it determines the rate of shrinkage towards T. So basically what we have is S, our sample covariance, right? It's unbiased, but it's very unstable. And we have T, it may be biased, right? But it's actually many times a low dimensional representation of the data, a low dimensional representation of the network, it's sparse. And we're gonna try to balance those. And it turns out you can solve this problem analytically, and we have this expression right here. So instead of, you know, the inverse of S, which does not exist when P is larger than N, we have the inverse of this expression. And it has some nice properties. It's always positive definite, so meaning the inverse always exists. When lambda is large enough, it's also well conditioned. And this expression is has a better risk properties than the sample covariance or the inverse of the sample covariance matrix, even when the number of samples is higher than the number of variables. So it had really better risk properties. And many people know this problem in the form of the graphical lasso, where we don't have a ridge penalty, but an L1 penalty, right? And if you have an L1 penalty, you're working with the graphical lasso, then estimation means automatic model selection, because estimation means inducing sparsity. This one doesn't do that, so that's an ad hoc step. But actually, I see that as an advantage of the method. So going to the advantages of the method, or the implementation, you know, there are many ways that RAGS supports, you know, sparsification or shooting holes in the matrix, right? We could do simple thresholding up to, let's say, determining the posterior probability that an edge is present. So we can do local false discovery rate testing in order to. So you have probabilistic control, in a sense. Or my personal favorite, we could even ask Chuck Norris to deliver a list of partial correlation elements that deserve to be non-zero. But, the basic idea is, right, there's this slurry of availability of possibilities, and you can exert possibly probabilistic control in retaining edges. To me, that's an example, an advantage, right? Another advantage is that it's more stable and has a higher true positive rate, especially when the true network is quite dense and when the P to N ratio gets more extreme. So, right? So here we have two stability graphs, one for the graphical ridge, one for the graphical lasso, in a situation where the true graph was actually quite dense and actually resembles the one we find in the graphical ridge. And when we lower the sample size, you know, the true positive rate and the stability of the graphical ridge stay quite good while the lasso actually fully breaks down. If you go to 20, it selects nothing anymore. And it's also quite fast because we have an analytic estimator giving the penalty, right? It's quite fast. And we can use various computational tricks to very swiftly find the optimal penalty, the value for the optimal penalty perimeter. And most of its core, all the workhorse functions are actually implemented in C++. So it's pretty fast, especially in comparison to some of the competitors. But maybe the main advantage to me is that it's a one-stop go. So there are many packages out there that may focus on extraction or focus on visualization or focus on analysis or just a combination of two. But Rex to Ridges tries to bring amenities or give amenities for all, right? So extraction, visualization, analysis. So it's really a one-stop go for the convenience of the end user. So an extraction is on the base of the methodology we've just seen, right? Now visualization, here we have, just to give you an example, right? So here we have a metabolite network. Metabolites are the end products of metabolism in Alzheimer's patients. And you know, it's just one function that has quite a lot of flexibility in terms of visualization. So the attributes that you can assign to the nodes or to the edges, you know, you can do anything like thickness, color, boundaries, whatever. So here we have just colored the nodes according to the compound family a certain metabolite belongs to, and edges maybe let's say solid or dashed according to the positivity or negativity of, you know, of the partial correlation. You can use your imagination, because it's really quite flexible. And it's also flexible in the layout that you can use. So here we have, you know, a simple circular layout, the same network in a grid layout, and the same network with a force-directed algorithm. Basically, you know, probably everybody knows iGraph. All the layout options that are supported in iGraph are supported here because that's what we import from them. Right? Very nice package. iGraph, that is. Okay, so once you have visualized, you also want to, you know, analyze your network, right? And RAGS supports analysis at various levels. So we might want to do analysis on the global scale, so on a global network, on the total network. So we could be interested in, let's say, determining you know, distribution of connections over the complete network for all the nodes. Or we could try to divide the whole network into a core and periphery structure. It's possible. At the group level, we might be interested in finding groups of nodes that are really closely connected together, right? Finding communities that are a proxy for some, say, functional module. At the path level, we could be interested in, say, finding strong or strongest paths between two nodes of interest, right? And then discerning if these paths are moderating or mediating in terms of the observed marginal covariance. And at the node level, we might be interested in detecting hubs, right? Detecting those, let's say, nodes that are central in terms of, you know, the possible flow of biological information or whatnot. You know, it supports all of those. All these types of analyses at all these levels. Up till now, we have talked about, you know, just, you know, extracting, visualizing, and analyzing one graph. But many times in omics, right, we have molecular features, and they can be measured across multiple studies. Or you can have a data set, and it can consist of subclasses. Or you might be interested in, you know, comparing controls to diseased or various subtypes of a disease. So that's a situation in which you want to simultaneously estimate multiple precision matrices for each subclass, taking into account that they may have common origins, but still respecting that there is unique signal in there. And that's what it supports. And it also supports then some ease of visualization and analysis after that. So here we have a very simple example with just two classes, again, metabolite networks, on two classes of Alzheimer's patients, one with and one without a genetic variant. So here we have the one without, and here we have class two, the one with. So it's very easy, you know, to visualize in the same coordinates and then to extract, let's say, the joint graph or the differential graph, right? And downstream, you can then do the analysis of the type we've just seen on each of the subclasses separately, or even on the joint or differential graphs. It's all possible. So that was horizontal integration, so integration across multiple of these studies, but we're also interested in, let's say, vertical integration. So that's a situation where we have the same persons, the same patients maybe, but they're measured at different molecular levels. So we have data from them across multiple of these omics platforms, and then we want to integrate them, right? So what we then try to do is to try to take into account known information about the flow of information in molecular biology to partially direct such a network or to allow for cycles and loops. And this is a simple example where on GBM, this is an aggressive form of brain tumor, and we were interested in which microRNAs, these are small DNA transcripts that may influence gene expression, so which microRNAs actually sequester or target which gene transcripts. Right? Simple example. So in terms of development, the current version is 2.2, and it has the core module. So that has, you know, all the internal machinery. And that feeds into the fused module, and that's the module that's doing the horizontal integration. And what's in development and coming soon is then the DCMG module, stands for direct cyclic mixed graph, and that's the module that's doing the vertical integration. And something that's coming or planned, and we're working on already, is a robust module that should feed into the core module, which, you know, allows us to be more robust and to move beyond Gaussianity. So the main message here is, okay, so if you're into precision matrices, if you're into network modeling, and you have high dimensional data, and you're not really a fan of maybe graphical SU or want to try something different, you know, you can use this. It's a one-stop go. So it's very convenient in extracting, visualizing, and analyzing. And you can also use it for different forms of integrating high dimensional data. It doesn't necessarily have to be omic data. But if you have omic data, you might want to give it a try. So in a sense, you know, get rich or die trying. Or if you use extra ridges, you may have 99 problems, but the ridge ain't one. I see half of people laughing, other half not. If you're not into rap music, I know this makes no sense, but that's OK. So I'm the creator and maintainer, but no longer the sole author. So Anders Bilgrau from Denmark, he was really, really a driving force behind developing the Fused module. Wessel van Wieringen, you know, he's the same department as I am. He's a partner in crime and actually developed a sister package to RAGS T-Ridges that deals with temporal data. It's called RAGS T-Ridges, so it's worth checking out. And Mark van de Wiel is also at the same department, and he's a collaborator on some of the methodological developments that go into the package. And kudos to, kudos to RStudio, because I'm originally a Fortran guy, and RStudio has made my life in terms of R much easier. And also, of course, kudos to all the imports, especially iGraph and RCPP Armadillo. It's really nice. And, well, I hope you don't feel like these people. And if you don't, then check out the Git page. So I haven't shown you any code, but my Git page, it has on it various courses that I've given. It has, let's say, worked examples, exercises, whatnot, so making it easy for you to try and use it. Okay? So thank you for listening. Are there questions? Yeah.
Have you done any simulation studies of the properties, like compare it to Lasso and under different like random network models?
Yeah, we have. We've compared it to other rich type estimators, right? Like the Duan Wolf, and what we can say is that we have better risk properties in terms of the Frobenius loss, quadratic loss. We've also compared it to the graphical Lasso, and it's more stable, has a higher true positive rate, lower loss, meaning better risk, of course. And it can handle more extreme P to N ratios, especially when the true graph is more dense. And all of these are in a paper that we have in CSDA, and you can find it. You can find it on the GitHub page. Any other questions? Okay, so the question is why the inverse of S and why not S? Well, if you're interested in correlation graphs, right, which is viable, I mean, of course, it's just mirrored, right? I mean, so this is an estimator of the precision, but it's at the same time an estimator of the covariance. So you could use it to make covariance graph. That's no problem. The only thing is that when we're doing the precision matrix, we're actually conditioning. So we're not looking at correlation graphs, but partial correlation graphs, meaning that a lot of the more spurious correlations, if you think of the graph as a representation of a DAG, actually fall away. And in that sense, it's a little bit more representative of the true causal structure, right? Do we have time for one more? So is there a last question?
So I missed how you got the cutoff for the how you got the zero values for the elements. So in rich, you don't get zero element values. So
there's a whole plethora of things you can do. You can just do simple thresholding. The one that we use the most is local false discovery rate testing. So we have a mixture model on the partial correlations, and then you get the posterior probability of an edge being present given the observed partial correlation, and then we threshold them according to that, and usually we take a cutoff of 0.95. So it's empirical base. And that actually, it was developed by Shaver and Strimmer in a nice paper. I should say that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you.